Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the Retro Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to the Retro Next podcast. Today's guest is author Tessa Bailey. Tessa writes hot steamy romances. Her latest is Tools of Engagement, which is book 3 in the Hot and Hammer series, but it can be read as standalone. For this interview, I invited my friend Tess to join me in chatting with Tessa. In this chat, we talk about Tessa's writing process, her books, and some fun book recommendations. Now let's go to the interview. Hi, Tessa. Welcome to the Retro Next podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
And for those listeners, we also have Tess, and they're joining us in the interview. So hi, Tess. Welcome to the Retro Next podcast.
Hi, Laura. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Awesome. So Tessa, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am a 36-year-old woman. Start with the basics. Yeah. I live on Long Island in New York. I've been here for about 5 years. I have a husband and a 9-year-old daughter and a cat. This is my 8th year as a published romance author. So it's just now starting to get, I'm just now starting to get it. That's how long it takes to start understanding what you're doing. And sometimes you still don't, but I don't really have any about me. Like, what do I do? It's so hard since quarantine started to remember what I used to do. But I used to like to travel. I love entertaining and having friends in the backyard doing socially distanced barbecues, and that's been kind of fun. I did deviled eggs the other day. They were very good.
I saw that on Instagram.
Did you?
I saw your deviled eggs.
So it was so funny. My friend Jillian and I, we always meet between New York and Philadelphia, every 3 months we meet for lunch, but we haven't been able to do that since February. So we about a month ago, we ended up meeting in a restaurant and off the New Jersey Turnpike, and it was so hot. It was 95 degrees. So we wandered into a Hobby Lobby and I found this double decker, pastry tray, display tray for $5. And I was like, how is this $5? What is this store? It's magical. Wow. And so I've just been dying to use it. And that was the maiden voyage of my double decker.
Well, it looks really nice.
Thank you. Nobody ate the eggs for 10 minutes. And I was if you don't eat the eggs, you have to go home.
You have to go. They're going to go bad and they take a long time to make, right? Deviled eggs take a while to make. So it looks very nice.
Thank you. They do take a while. And then they're never right the first time. So then you're adding things and then you're adding more things. And then it's, it just turns out how it turns out. Yeah. You just got to cross your fingers.
Yep, that's right.
Yes. So what inspired you to become a writer?
Well, I've been reading romance since I was 14. I discovered, my first book was Hidden Fires by Sandra Brown. And so it's when you read your first romance that really gets you, really speaks to you. You're like, oh, this is me. This is going to be my thing. I love this. And so I read romance all my teens and 20s. And then or somewhere around my mid 20s, I wrote a book. And it was never published, but I was I could do this. I can actually discipline myself enough to write. Then fast forward a couple of years, I had a baby. I was trying to hold down jobs unsuccessfully. Crazy, weird jobs. And I finally was okay, I'm going to try this again. And really what happened was that my husband was out of work because of Hurricane Sandy. Mm-hmm. It flooded. He's a bartender, and it flooded his bar. And so I had been raising the baby alone for, I mean, like during the day, for like a year, and I didn't have any creative outlets. And so like when that happened, I was like, okay, here, you take the baby. I'm going to go write a book. And so that was, I feel like it was an explosion of just all this pent up creativity inside mm-hmm. of me. So it was more, I think it was more born of like just a need to express myself some way than really being inspired, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
and I think I kind of get that a little bit, you know, because when I had my daughter, it was hard. You know, having a baby is hard, and you're just surrounded with them all day long, right? And so you kind of, like for me, I was a little bit like, who am I now? I'm a mom, yes, for sure. I'm a wife. But then what else is there? You know, so I could totally see that creativity needing an outlet to do something, you know? So
yes, absolutely. You do sacrifice your former identity, I think. Mm-hmm. And you try to hold on to it as much as you can, but it's very difficult. And you know, like you see a lot of new moms will be like selling products on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And people kind of like look down on them or make fun of them or like, oh God, this one's trying to sell me candles or skincare cream or whatever. And it's like, no, they're trying so hard to get something new and to like yes. branch out and redefine themselves in this really limited capacity because you don't have a lot of time mm-hmm. on your hands
no,
anymore.
You don't.
And so like, I have so much love for those LuLaRoe and all that. I'm like, you know, it's just, you got to do what you can to like satisfy that thing inside of you that makes you you. So, yeah, parenting stuff.
Yeah, it is.
So what was your journey to get that first book published?
You know, I got really lucky. You know how they say like, mm-hmm. What is it? Opportunity plus experience mm-hmm. is like the key to success or something. Like you have to have both. Mm-hmm. And I think that was actually Malcolm Gladwell that said that, I should probably say. But he, so I sent it into Entangled. And my editor there, she said she like randomly picked it up out of the slush pile and took it home and read it over the weekend. And the book was Protecting What's His, which was my first book. It's about a cop who is living next door to a woman who's just stolen $50,000 and she's on the run. Yeah, so she was like, she called me literally, I sent it in, she called me 2 days later. And she was like, yep, I wanna buy this, like, let's do it. And I was like, are you serious? I mean, because it never happens that way. It's very hard to get someone to pay attention to you and you've never been published before. So I happened to just get really lucky and that somebody not only recognized hopefully what is talent, but she also was willing to work with me. Like, cause she can see that I didn't know what category romance was. I was like, what's a trope? I just like read books. I don't know what the technical terms are. So she was willing to like educate me a little bit. And I just got really lucky for that. So here I am 50 books later. And I wouldn't be, you know, editors, they're really just necessary angels. Very grateful for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cool. That's pretty awesome. So I know that like I don't know if it was recently, but I know that, like you've been publishing some of your books independently. So how do you decide what you want to write independently versus traditionally published?
So when you write traditionally, you, you know, and you sign a contract with a publisher, like you're signing on to write, like for instance, with the Hot and Hammered series, to that starts with Fix Her Up, that was like an adult contemporary of 80,000 words. So that's what they contracted for me. Now I can't independently write that kind of book like for the next year and a half once I sign that contract. So I have to kind of like find other genres or other ways, like maybe different lengths, maybe write new adults instead or paranormal like I'm doing now. So you kind of find a way to not like take away from the series you're writing with the publisher. You try to do something different so that you're not like kind of cannibalizing those that other series. You want it to be like a singular standalone thing. So it's sort of like, so they have an exclusive thing that you're doing. So I usually end up getting to be pretty creative with my independent releases. I can go, hey, maybe I'll write a vampire. And maybe I'll write a girl who works in a morgue. And, you know, it actually is really fun because you can kind of go, what am I in the mood for right now? I'm going to write it right now and release it a month later. And that's really nice, you know, because with publishing, you're kind of planning things a year out. And sometimes you're maybe not, you're like, you have to recapture that mood. Whereas when you're doing the independent stuff, it's like, you can kind of go on a whim if you want to. But there is really, there's merits to both, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. That totally makes sense, which is kind of why you went a little bit in the paranormal section with your independently released books this time around with Reborn Yesterday.
Yes. Okay. That's such a fun series. I always wanted to write something that was a little bit like a dark comedy. And yeah. That was the intention going in. And then once you start writing in the characters, they just do their own thing. And that's one of those series that's kind of taken wing. And the characters have told me what they want to do. And the stakes are so much higher when paranormal romance, like the world is at stake. And so that's been really fun, you know, as opposed to like these two people that are just like, you know, maybe fighting in their office or, you know, like there really is a difference to it.
Yeah.
Not to take away from the romantic comedies because I love them. But it's just a completely new, different experience.
It is a different experience. So that's a perfect segue into my next question is, what is your writing process like? Like you said, in these books, they kind of tell you their story. Is that how you feel most of your writing is like?
I do. You know, like I always plan characters first. I feel like characters are the most important thing to me, writing memorable people. So when I plot, it's usually I take the two people. I have kind of like a system of, okay, here's my two people. What's their past? What do I want their future to be? And what makes it so they can't be together? Like, what's the conflict? And once you have those, I feel like once you have those five components, like his past, her past, or his past, whatever you're writing. And then you can kind of go, okay, what in his past, what in her past is preventing them from being together in the future or in their current situation, what's preventing it? And then that's really where the plot comes from. Having said that, once I start writing, like I said, the characters might decide to be different than I had envisioned. So I just kind of have to adjust. And I adjust a lot. And sometimes I don't even really understand their motivations until like almost the last chapter. And I have to go back and you know, understand them better from the beginning. So it's trial and error.
I love it. So do you write an outline and then you go a pantser way as the story leads you, just unravels a little bit more? Like it's kind of like a mixed half and half, or is it straight up plotting and then, you know, just work with it?
I'm like, so I write beats. Like I know what, the beginning, I usually have the beginning scene in my head, kind of like where it starts. I know where I want them to go. So then I just kind of plot the beats. Like maybe there's probably 10 beats of where the story shifts throughout the beginning and the end. And I know I have to get to those beats. I don't always know how I'm going to get between them. So that's kind of what I do. Like once I write a chapter, I got to sit down and figure out how to get to the next beat. Whether it's like a scene with her friends, a scene where she finds out something about him, like some sort of mental shift for the character that I figure out. Okay. That's kind of how I plot.
I love this. And how do you organize yourself as a writer? How do you keep track of all the ideas, inspirations, characters? The whole process.
If you know that a lot of people do have a process. I don't have, I'm like, it's all up here. It's all up here. I don't know. And I don't really have to like write things down or keep track. The characters are so alive to me. Mm-hmm. I They live in my head. Even the characters I wrote 50 books ago, I can still get in their head. Mm. And it's really, and you know, I think some people have that with plots or different things like that, where I have it with definitely specifically the characters, where they just, once I create them, it's really easy for me to remember who they are and what drives them. So I do have Pinterest boards and things like that. And, you know,
okay, so
I do
like,
all the little things.
So I love your Pinterest boards. I'm not a stalker or anything, but I do love your Pinterest boards. They're just so, I love it when authors have Pinterest boards when I'm reading their books. It's just so nice to kind of get a visual of what you're thinking. Not that it's necessarily always what you're thinking, because those are just your kind of ideas that you've pinned. But I love your author, your pinned board page. So it's nice.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, that's who she was thinking of. So and so, you know,
I feel like they're more for the reader, you know, I want to give people an idea of what I'm seeing in my head, but it's very rare that a specific actor will take place of a character in my head. It doesn't happen very often, you know, but sometimes it does. And, Dansby Swanson is who I picture. Dansby Swanson plays for the Braves, and he's who I pictured as Travis in Fix Her Up.
I totally
and that
see
one
that.
Stuck.
I could totally
beautiful without trying. Yeah. But I sometimes it does help get me in the mindset, going through Pinterest and pinning certain things and going, oh, I love the feel of this picture. I love the way she looks confident in this dress, things like that. And it'll help spur other thoughts.
Yes. I just want to say thank you for doing that. Cause I don't see a lot of authors do that. Some do, but as a reader, I love it. I think it's such an awesome thing to do. So thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. I'll make sure I keep doing it then. if it's only just for you, I'll keep doing it.
I love it. Yes, please. Okay, so the next question is, and I know you have a podcast, and I love your podcast, and how do you manage writing, recording your podcast, and, you know, everything else that goes on in your day-to-day life?
It's, you know, it's hard. I'm not going to lie. It really is hard, and there's frustration sometimes. I wake up really early, and I try and get as much done as I can early, because I think that helps a lot. When I wait till the middle of the day to start writing, I don't get much done. I think there's a feeling of being up before everybody else and going, okay, look at you, you're doing it, you're legitimate. But I don't know. Yes. It's really hard. I'm not gonna lie, and I have a really supportive family. That goes, okay, mom's recording, everybody upstairs, be quiet, you know, and because, and then I, you know, once I do that, I always balance it with family time, or I try to, if I can. I'll finish recording the podcast and my words for the day, and then I'll go, okay, Pat, you, my husband, you take a break, I'll take our daughter to wherever. Right now it's there's nowhere to go. But I'm like, want to go to Home Goods? we don't really. Yeah.
There's nothing to do. A chance to go anywhere.
Yeah, we go to we go to Barnes and Noble a lot lately because it's so spaced out, and their safety procedures are really well in place, and books are there.
So, books are there, exactly.
Yeah.
Never tired of even just looking at them, right?
So, never. And sometimes,
I side note, but my daughter, she will spend literally hours at Barnes and Noble, and she'll buy one book, and I'm like, what are you doing? And she's like, mommy, I just want to look at them, you know? I'm like, okay, I can't fault you for that, because I can sit here and look at the books too. They're gorgeous, you know? So, it's funny.
They are so gorgeous.
They are. So now getting back to Hot and Hammered, what was your inspiration for this series?
Well, I live on Long Island. Like I said, there's a town of Port Jefferson, not far from me where this series takes place. And I had taken, just on a whim, I took my family there for like this Charles Dickens festival. This was like 3 or 4 years ago. And like for one weekend of the year, every year, they turn the whole town into like a Charles Dickens like scene, like a festival. And everybody is like, the townspeople dress up like chimney sweeps, and everybody speaks in like a Cockney accent, and there's bonfires and apple cider. Uh-huh. And I was like, I love this town. I want to write something here. So I always had it in the back of my head. And I always write in New York City because that's where I lived for so long. But now that I live in Long Island, I feel like I kind of have enough knowledge of the feeling here and the people here to kind of branch out from New York City a little bit and write something in kind of a small town, which I've always wanted to do, but really didn't feel like mm-hmm. I had the chops for it because I don't know small towns. But now I kind of feel like I could write it accurately. So once I had the town that I wanted to write in, I was like, I just want to write a really established family where everybody has their like roles that they're just born into. They've been in them since they were kids and they all want to break out of them, you know? So, yeah, thus the Castle family was born.
So, how do you pick a trope from the book? Like, we got little brother's best sister, brother's best sister, we've got marriage in trouble, a second chance, and we have enemies to lovers. Like, do you pick the tropes beforehand, or do characters dictate how they're going to fall in love?
It's like, no matter what story you plot, it's a trope. So I usually back into it. Okay. I write the story, I decide what the conflict is and what the plot is, and then I go, okay, so that's definitely friends to lovers. So that's definitely, yeah, second chance. And it's funny, like there is no story that I could write in romance that wouldn't have some trope attached to it. So I just usually do that secondly. Does that work? but yeah, that's, like I said, when I first started writing romance, I didn't even know what tropes were. So I would back into it every time. And then I think I just fell into that bad habit of doing it. So I still have it.
Hey, it works. So that's okay.
Hopefully.
Okay. So here's my question for you. I love it how you write your heroes that are alpha on the outside and ooey gooey cinnamon rolls on the inside. Would you say that's an accurate description for most of them? How do you get that perfect balance?
You know, I don't know. I really don't know. They're definitely alpha. I like possessive, jealous heroes. I always have. I don't like, kind of like a guy who's passive or who would like even consider letting the girl mm-hmm. go. I just want guys who are kind of in pursuit. I like that. But they do have to also be vulnerable. I think vulnerability is probably what makes them ooey gooey, is that they definitely have to have an insecurity yes. in some way, whether it's something from their past or even the way they look, you know, sometimes. And I think just a man with an insecurity is so attractive. I don't know, maybe this is me, but I like a man who is in his head about something and who isn't just, I guess, thinking exactly like a man, you know, like just all about gratification. Like there's other things going on. That's what you need to have that kind of balance.
It's a good balance. So, yeah, I got a couple questions that I talked to some engagement and even just the series. So, the first question is on the script is so this family is a house flippers, and there's a lot of, especially to this engagement, it's about flipping a house. Did you watch a lot of HGTV to figure out, like, this would be a great series? Yeah, like it's a profession. Or was it just kind of like the characters came to you and you're like, okay, they'll be flipping houses?
Well, yeah, I mean, who doesn't watch HGTV, honestly? It's so addictive. It's funny though, like the first book, Fix Her Up, is, yes, the family is house flippers, but like the main characters aren't even part of that company.
Yeah.
Like she's a birthday party clown, and he's a professional baseball player. Yeah. And so it's just kind of the backdrop, and also because it's something I can understand it. And there's something comforting in making things pretty.
Yeah.
but I had to research a lot about reality shows, like mm-hmm. specifically for Tools of Engagement, because they are on a house flipping reality show in the third book. So I had to like look at the timelines of that. Like, do they really flip it in a week, or is that all just bullshit? You know, like I had to really kind of look at that. And that was interesting. That was a lot of fun.
So. Yeah. Imagine that's a fun rabbit hole to go down.
Yes, it is. They're all scripted, by the way.
They have the interns do this and do X, Y, Z. So
yeah,
that's awesome. Talking about Tools of Engagement. So it's more about Bethany. She has her heart set and takes breath over the past couple of books. Just basically she wants to just flip this house. And then she faces her perfectionism. Like she wants to have it all perfect, and you know, taking this risk may go against it. And so why was Wes the perfect guy to put a cell wagger like to her? Because I love we got Jerry Maguire, you know.
Yes, he's Zellweger's for her. So yeah, you know the scene from Jerry Maguire for anybody who's listening. If you haven't seen Jerry Maguire, I feel like pop culture has turned it into kind of a joke with like you had me at hello and like, you know, just kind of like made all those beautiful lines into kind of like punchlines, you know, but it is the most romantic movie to me. I think it's one of the best romances of all time. I really do. But there's a scene where Tom Cruise leaves, like he quits his big sports agency firm and in a dramatic way, like in front of the entire room. And he's like, who's coming with me? And Renee Zellweger goes, I'll come with you. I'm coming with you. And she believes in his speech moves her. So she grabs the goldfish and she leaves with him. And so in Tools of Engagement, there's a situation like that where Bethany is like breaking away from her family's house flipping company, and she wants to do her own flip, and she's like, you know, totally all by herself. And then Wes quits and comes with her to help, which shocks her because they're enemies, like they hate each other. Mm-hmm. Obviously he doesn't really hate her. he kind of loves her all along, but yeah, so then Zellwegering kind of becomes a verb throughout the book. But Wes was perfect for Bethany because she needed to understand that, like, life doesn't need to be perfect to be perfect. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can make mistakes and you can be less than perfect and still be deserving of love. And she really needed to learn that lesson, and she learns it the hard way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I love the patience he gives her. And he's so swoon-worthy. Like, he's just... You know, if she needs to back off, he backs off, you know, and I loved reading their story.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. That's that balance you're looking for, because like, first of all, he's a 23-year-old guy. He's a former rodeo rider. Like, and so all those things indicate that he's going to be kind of like this, you know, flippant, irreverent, like kind of fly by night guy. So that patience that he exhibits, I feel like it convinced me, like as a writer, but also as a reader, that he's in it for the long haul. You know, he really gets it. He gets her.
So, you know, we're going to talk about the sex scenes. Okay. Because you write such great sex scenes, and they're always so steamy, but like, you're also so connected to the characters. So how do you write them, or... how do you get, I don't know, inspiration.
You can say whatever you want to me.
I don't know if I want to say if that's how you get your inspiration, but like, how do you write your sex scenes? They're so steamy, but yet that hint of vulnerability is always there, like we talked about before.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Is it just me, or does anybody else think about sex like 24 hours a day? I mean, it's just, I think about it at the grocery store, while I'm watching a different TV show, I'm just like constantly, it's on my mind. And I'm not saying there's something wrong with you if you're not thinking about it all the time, but I do, okay? And constantly. and can't stress that enough. But he said, so it really doesn't take a lot to get me into a mood to write that scene, to write those scenes. But I have a rule against scenes for just, that are just gratuitous, like just sex for the sake of sex. There's nothing wrong with that ever. But just for my purposes, I think that one of the characters has to either let their walls down in that scene and let the other person get a glimpse of the real one on the inside, or there has to be some sort of, you know, like something has to be said that can't be taken back. Like there has to be something that moves the plot forward. You know, it can't just be sex for the sake of sex for me. So that often creates a really emotional, gives it an emotional impact that I think is really satisfying for women, you know, because really sex is emotional for us, I think, some of the time, most of the time. And I just like to use it as a plot point as opposed to just filler.
Yeah. And I love that too, when I'm reading my romances, you know, and it may be the first kiss or it may be a little bit something more, but for me, there has to be that emotional connection, you know? And like you said, there's nothing wrong with, you know, reading erotica or sex for sex, but I love it when there's a certain meaning behind whatever it is that they're doing, you know, whether it's a plot point or them trying to get closer or be vulnerable or whatever it might be. I love that. And I love it how you do it in your books.
Yeah. My heroes are dirty talkers, right? So like, I just think that there's something really sexy about, cause I don't know. It seems like men are so hard to get, like, to figure out what they're thinking. I think they say it's hard to figure out what women are thinking, but I think it's the opposite. And maybe that's just who I've been with, or my husband is very hard to, very, just a tough nut to crack. But like, I love when a guy says exactly what he's thinking. And even if it's crude or it's objectifying, as long as the woman is into it, it's okay in my book, as long as she's consenting and as long as she's enjoying herself. Be as honest as possible in that moment. Cause I love that. I love that they're just stripped down.
Yes. And I love the communication too. Like you said, you know, them men or the man saying what he wants, or the woman even saying what she wants. I love all of it. You know, I agree with you there completely.
Thank you.
Yeah. I don't know, you know, if it matters what I think, but yes,
it does.
Okay, so let's talk about nicknames. You give your characters a lot of nicknames, and I personally, I love the nicknames. We had, you know, in this series, in the Hot and Hammer series, we had Baby Girl. I think it was Honey Girl in one of them, and then I just read the Getaway series, and I know we had like such cute ones like Blackbeard and Goose. I mean, I'm like dying over these. They're so freaking cute. How do you just come up with them based on like their backstory, or do you try to incorporate nicknames into your books?
I always like to have like a nickname that the hero or heroine, they specifically call each other. It just lends a little bit more specialness to their connection. But usually I give the nickname based on their initial meeting. So like, I'm just thinking back to, like my first series, the Line of Duty series, Officer Off Limits, when they meet at a vending machine, and like he's trying to convince her like trail mix is a bad choice. And so, you know, she starts calling him trail mix, and he calls her sunshine. And it's just like, because it's based on that initial meeting, it's like their first impression of each other is where they get that nickname. So it's usually based on the first impression.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. I'm such a sucker for them. I'm like, this is so cute.
I like them too. I do like them too.
Okay, perfect. So, I know you just finished the Hot and Hammered series. Do you have any other upcoming projects coming up soon?
I have the third book in the Paranormal series coming out probably in December or January. Well, so Tools of Engagement comes out September 22nd. And then after that, you know, yeah. will probably be the third book in the paranormal series, which is my vampires. And the third book is Tucker, the Uber driving vampire. And I'm really excited about that. And then I actually also have another series already planned with Avon about two socialites that get banished to a small Washington fishing village because they have made too much trouble for their rich dad. And so he's like, go live on your own for a while.
I love it.
It's kind of like The Simple Life meets Deadliest Catch. Because, yeah, it's really fun. I've already written the first book, and I absolutely love it. And so the heroes are king crab fishermen.
And oh, nice.
Yes. Yeah, sea captains. Awesome. Sea captains are my original Ooh. Obsession when it comes to romance. So writing them, that's kind of my crack. I love a sea captain.
Very awesome.
I love this.
I love it. I already can't wait.
Yeah, it's called It Happened One Summer, and I think it'll be out, you know, in summer 2021. So, and hopefully the world will be back to normal by then.
I hope so.
That's awesome. So now let's go to a round of book recommendations. This is an opportunity for you to share with the audience what they should read next. What is your favorite genre?
Okay, so I just read The Widow of Rose House by Diana Biller. Did you guys read that?
Yes, I've read it.
I really enjoyed that. It was totally different. And it combined a lot of my favorite things, which are haunted houses, scandalous widows. It was just like, it had everything. It had murder. I was just really into it. And it's basically about this
dirty talking hero.
Had a dirty talker hero. Yeah. He was like so unique. He was like a charming inventor with like, she would insult yes. him and he would just smile at her. And I was like, I love you. I really love you. I have,
yes, the relationship was so cute.
I feel like I wrote down, I've been reading like bestsellers lately. Like I read Where the Crawdads Sing, and I read Daisy Jones and the Six, and just kind of like wanting to read those pop culture phenomenon books that everybody's loving. But I, you know, when it comes to romance, I usually pick a slow burn. Like I really like Mariana Zapata. I read everything she writes. And what else have I read recently that I liked? I read the Filthy Rich Americans series by Nikki Sloan. Mm. Oh my God, that is, it's like wrong on so many levels in like the best way. If you want to read something different, that's just like, oh, it is, it's wild. But it's a trilogy and I highly recommend it if you just want something real kinky.
I love it. I love Nikki Sloan. Like she writes really good erotica.
She really does. And that series, it's crazy. It's like this girl who is, she's kind of had this marriage arranged for her to like the local rich guy, and it's to save her parents from ruin because they're like, they've spent all their money. And then the father-in-law becomes obsessed with her. Like, and he tries to like steal her from his son for three books. Oh, and you're like, do I want this to happen? Like, you don't wow. even know. And there's just some scenes that I can't even get into. It's too early. But seriously, if you haven't read that and you just want something like completely just like it's like your hidden porn searches, like you don't want anybody to know about, it's that series. Right there.
So tell us where you can find you online.
Okay, so I'm on Instagram at Tessa Bailey is an author. I have a Facebook group called Bailey's Babes. I wanted to say that if you are reading the Hot and Hammered series and you want a signed copy of Tools of Engagement, you can pre-order the paperback from Word Bookstore in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing signed paperbacks for that, so I'm really excited. And that's a good way to support like a local independent bookstore as well. That's I don't know where else I am online. I don't go on Twitter anymore. So, and then Facebook, obviously. But yeah, you can find me pretty much anywhere. I'd say Instagram's probably the best place, though.
Awesome. Thank you, Tessa, for being in the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Oh, yeah. The Read Me Romance podcast is my podcast. And we put a free audiobook out every week. So if you like audiobooks or you want to try audiobooks, it's a good free way to do it.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, or rate and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Want to join a romance-loving community? Want weekly book recommendations, monthly author Q&As, and book recommendation meetups? Make new friends? Then join our Patreon community. To sign up, please follow the links in the show notes. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you so much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.